Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep-healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. All right, glad you're with us. Happy Tuesday, and write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN. You know what may sadly define this era of our lives and the presidency of Donald Trump has nothing to do with Russia, nothing to do with anything. How do you possibly deal with a madman in North Korea that has threatened again and again to use nuclear weapons, that has now had the capacity and the ability to build ICBMs? You know, I went over this in great specificity and great detail last night on the program about, well, how is it possible? How did Kim Jong-il, who is Kim Jong-un's father, how did he manipulate the United States of America into giving him billions and billions and billions of dollars and then say, oh, we're not going to build nuclear weapons? And then he goes out there and builds nuclear weapons. How is that possible? Well, it happened. And if you look at the history of it, I think it's an abject lesson of exactly what this country should never do. Remember, it all started on Friday. And I'm only telling you, I'm not trying to scare you. I am trying to get you to understand a reality here that is really dangerous on top of everything else that this country is now facing. And that includes Iran, that includes ISIS, that includes China, Russia, that includes radical Islamists, that includes all of those that are sworn to our destruction. But we've got a growing threat, and I think it is probably the number one threat we're now facing, and that's North Korea. And you've got the president now vowing to take action. Lindsey Graham said earlier today, and this should scare everybody, so one of the options that President Trump is actively considering is to neutralize the North Korean nuclear threat is a military attack that would, quote, destroy North Korea itself. And Graham told that to NBC News today. There's a military option to destroy North Korea's nuclear program and North Korea itself. If there's going to be a war to stop him, Kim Jong-un, it will be over there. If thousands die, they're going to die over there. They're not going to die here. And President Trump told me that to my face. That's a pretty scary scenario. You know, almost reminds me, you know, you think this is big news every day. Russia, Russia, Russia. Well, Russia, Russia, Russia could quickly evolve into North Korea in seconds. That's how dangerous this is. It all started again on Friday. You got the rogue regime conducting yet another ICBM test, which, of course, is the longest missile test in the history of North Korea. You understand that now we're talking about missiles that can go nearly 10,000 miles and reach downtown New York City, downtown Boston? This is now a real, clear, present danger to the United States. Now, on the upside, over the weekend, the U.S. conducted a military successful THAAD anti-ballistic missile test over the Pacific Ocean. And earlier today, during a cabinet meeting, the president said yesterday that his administration will handle North Korea. Didn't want to go into more details. Now, the president's also trying to press and pressure China, because China has so many economic ties to Pyongyang, to stop their aggressive behavior. Now, Japan's prime minister is now saying that he and President Trump have agreed to take further action against North Korea. South Korea is now hoping that they can get a hold of nuclear weapons themselves because they're sitting ducks right now. And the president is now facing what I think is a situation where there are no good answers here. There are none. And the reason that there are no good answers, and this is why It dovetails perfectly into the things that we conservatives were warning before this idiotic Iranian deal where billions and billions of dollars were handed over to the Iranians, where they get 25 days notice of inspections. They continue to spin their centrifuges, and we don't even get to send the inspectors in. They're not even American inspectors, if we even get them in. But they got the plane loads of money that were dumped on their lap so they can buy more military equipment as they continue to saber rattle, as they continue to threaten to wipe Israel off the map, the United States off the map, as they burn the Israeli flag and the flag of the United States of America. Now, you got to understand how we got here. Most people don't know this history. I'll give it to you. The media will never touch it. There is something the media won't tell you, and that is back in 1994, the Clinton administration at the time, they struck a deal with Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, where according then to the New York Times, the U.S. agreed to give North Korea over $4 billion, $4 billion, taxpayer dollars, a lot of money back in the 90s, 1994, over energy aid, over a decade. And what were we to get in exchange? North Korea was going to freeze and eventually end their nuclear weapons program, and their nuclear ambitions were going to go away. And as part of the deal, North Korea would allow inspectors into their nuclear sites. This all sound familiar? But, and the important part here is the but, they'd also be allowed to keep its nuclear fuel rods, which can be used to make weapons for an unspecified number of years. It was a horrible deal. And every time they'd saber rattle, in would come the Clintons. All right, but you really got to mean it this time, as he hands over more money. And he hands over more money. All right, but listen, this, I'm serious this time. You got to promise me. I want your word here, Kim Jong-il. Please, please, please. Never happened. And anyway, Bill Clinton then goes out and this is a good deal for the American people. We're preventing them from getting nuclear weapons. No, you didn't.
Before I take your questions, I'd like to say just a word about the framework with North Korea that Ambassador Gallucci signed this morning. This is a good deal for the United States.
Nope.
North Korea will freeze and then dismantle its nuclear program. South Korea and our other allies will be better protected. The entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons. South Korea, with support from Japan and other nations, will bear most of the cost of providing North Korea with fuel to make up for the nuclear energy it is losing. And they will pay for an alternative power system for North Korea that will allow them to produce electricity while making it much harder for them to produce nuclear weapons. The United States and international inspectors will carefully monitor North Korea to make sure it keeps its commitments. Only as it does so will North Korea fully join the community of nations.
Oh, only then. Okay, well, the problem is he gave them the money. They never kept their promise. And guess what? They got nuclear weapons. And by 2006, they conducted their first nuclear test. And then under the Obama administration, well, the North Korean nuclear threat grew rapidly because we did nothing. And it's now turned into a crisis. And here's why there's no good option here. Because if this guy keeps saber rattling and he keeps firing his ICBMs, at some point we've got to realize that this nut could possibly, because he has the weapons, use them. So then what are our options? Think about this. Give me a good option here. Because the options are going to be you take out his nuclear sites, but does he have enough time to launch weapons, nuclear weapons? Where's he going to launch them? Does he have short-range nukes that he'll drop in Seoul and South Korea? Does he have short-range nukes that he'll drop in Japan? Does he have long-range nukes that he'll try and fire into the United States? And what if the THAAD missile, the technology that we have, doesn't work then? Now, listen, I admire the fact that we have this capability and this technology and that we probably have the ability to stop it all. But at the end of the day, the THAAD anti-ballistic missile test we had over the Pacific was great. But what if it doesn't work here when it matters? I mean, now we're counting on technology to save American lives. And you're dealing with a guy that has nuclear weapons. And you have a guy that's a madman and a guy that seems to absolutely not care about his own people and absolutely not care about the rest of the world. Is he that crazy that he wants to, you know, doesn't believe in mutually assured destruction? The former Soviet Union, they were smart enough to understand that they'd get destroyed in the process, and they didn't do it. So we can't say or speak for him. So we go in there, we attack their nuclear sites, but we don't get to them fast enough, or all of them. Maybe they've got a hidden site we don't even know about because it's hard to get intelligence on the ground in North Korea. All right, so we try to take out their sites. He launches against Seoul. He launches against Japan. Who knows? He might even launch against China, for crying out loud, if he's that nuts. There's no good option here. You can't negotiate with him. Bribing didn't work. So the only thing that's left is a military option, which is, you know, an unmitigated human disaster and tragedy because you got a maniacal dictator that is hell-bent on holding the world hostage. And that raises another question. Well, why would we do it again and this time be doing it in the case of Iran? We're making the same mistake all over again. We know what their intentions are. So there's no good option here. And I'm telling you, pay attention. This is going to become a much bigger issue than I think anybody's anticipating as of today, August 1st. Anyway, one other thing I want to talk about. Finally, the House Judiciary Committee sent this letter to the Department of Justice calling for a second special counsel to be appointed. It's about time. And we're going to get into all of the details. What was Debbie Wasserman Schultz trying to hide? For example, Debbie Wasserman Schultz knew that this guy was, in fact, double billing for his work, some $4 million. He's getting paid as much as chiefs of staff in Washington, which is the highest salary he can possibly get. And then on top of that, he's getting more things. You know, he's got his whole family. One guy works at a car dealership. One guy works at a McDonald's. And then he's staying home all day. And people that don't seem to be qualified to be working in IT. And then he stays on the payroll, apparently was even going to continue to get paid, according to the Daily Caller today, if in fact he went to Pakistan, where he put $300,000 as trying to leave the country with an ankle bracelet. So what was it that he had that Debbie Wasserman Schultz clearly didn't want out? Was it the fact that she colluded, as we already know, to prevent Bernie from ever having a shot at the nomination, that the DNC primary, the Democratic primary, was rigged and fixed? Who knows what she was thinking here? Why did she fight the Capitol Police as hard as she did? That's another mystery that needs to be answered. Why did we have two government hard drives smashed into little smithereens in this guy's garage? Why was he trying to leave the country? Why was he going to get paid if he even left the country? Why did she keep him on the payroll up until recently? You know, what is it with the obsession of Democrats that they take hammers to electronic devices like BlackBerries and iPhones like Hillary did, or they delete 33,000 emails, and then just to make triply sure, they acid wash the computers and they bleach bit them, and then any phones they do hand over to the FBI, well, they end up being phones that are useless because they don't have SIM cards in them. How do you get away with such obstruction? And when are Republicans going to use their power that you gave them, their subpoena powers, to bring these people into Washington? Ukraine, Uranium One, Hillary's email, James Comey, Loretta Lynch, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Let's start with all of those first and see if we can get to the bottom of it all. All right, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program.
Covert operative Mitch Rapp is ready for anything, but this time the enemy is ready for him. Read Order to Kill, the explosive new novel in Vince Flynn's number one New York Times best-selling Mitch Rapp series. Because of unscrupulous members of the Pakistani Secret Service, Rapp finds himself chasing false leads in an effort to keep Pakistani nukes from falling into the hands of terrorists. Soon, it becomes alarmingly clear that the forces in Moscow are bent on fomenting even more chaos and turmoil in the Middle East, and Rapp must go deep into Iraqi territory, posing as an American ISIS recruit. There, he uncovers a plan more dangerous and insidious than he ever expected, one that could have far-reaching and catastrophic consequences. Written with the same relentless action as Vince Flynn's greatest novels, Mitch Rapp's latest adventure is as timely and provocative as ever. Order to Kill, a Mitch Rapp novel by Kyle Mills, is now in paperback wherever books are sold.
So I know most people probably are not paying a lot of attention to North Korea now, but I'd pay attention. I'd pay very close attention. Now, I meant to mention one other thing that, and this was from the Washington Examiner today, the U.S. military has detected highly unusual North Korean submarine activity just now, days after the Friday missile test, the intercontinental ballistic missile test that they had. And the activity was evidence of an ejection test. And that means a missile's cold launch system from a submarine. And that test uses high pressure steam to propel the missile out of the launch canister and into the air before its engines ignite. And this prevents damage to the submarine launching the missile. Now, this would be the third ejection test this month alone, demonstrating Pyongyang and North Korea and Kim Jong-un are making progress at developing their submarine launch skills. Who's giving them this technology, by the way? Is it the Russians? Chinese? Who's giving this to them? Are the Iranians working in conjunction with them? Who knows? But it's all really scary. I want to get back to this special counsel that the members of the House Judiciary sent. They want a special counsel appointed, and they should. And that should be about Hillary Clinton and Hillary's deletions, acid wash, bleach bit. It should be about her hammer taking electronic devices. After all, I just wanted the convenience of one device, a big lie. It's like the 33,000 emails about yoga, wedding, a funeral, and writing Bill Clinton, who doesn't email. It's like Debbie Wasserman Schultz and, you know, why was she fighting the Capitol Police so hard over a laptop? And why was she protecting this guy that had smashed government property, hard drives in his garage? Why did that happen? You know, when are we going to have an investigation into the former FBI director, James Comey? Now we got the general counsel of the FBI being investigated for leaks. Loretta Lynch, and we know what she did. Well, it's only a matter. This is not an investigation. It's a matter. And as we've been told, there's such a double standard. We don't have a two-tier justice. We have a two-tier justice system. We don't have equal justice under the law anymore because the media is so corrupt, they don't care. Just flip it. Let's just say everything that happened with Ukraine and meeting with the Ukrainian ambassador at the embassy was Trump. Let's say that it was Trump destroying hard drives. Let's say it was Trump deleting emails and smashing phone devices, Blackberries, iPhones with a hammer and sending the FBI, you know, devices without SIM cards and acid washing, you know, entire systems. Imagine it's uranium one is Trump giving up to 20% of our uranium to Russia and $145 million kickback to Trump's whatever. Imagine what the outrage would be. Imagine how people would be reacting to all of that. You know, just how many more instances? When is the shoe going to be on the other foot? When are Republicans, if they can't get anything done legislatively, and they seemingly can't, when are they at least going to use the subpoena powers and the ability to put these people under oath? Because my list is getting longer by the day. At least a few of these guys are waking up. Got to take a quick break. We'll come back to your calls. Much more coming up. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, so we got to get into what Lindsey Graham is now proposing. You know that I want a health care bill, and I want it yesterday, and I think that the Republicans are really pathetic. But I think the president's right. They can't be quitters. They can't give up. And I think if they do, there's going to be hell to pay at the ballot box. I think the American people will accept that Washington is a swamp and that there are some Republicans that absolutely are themselves somewhat, they're just disingenuous, dishonest, and they didn't mean the promises that they made to the American people. And it's beyond disappointing because, you know, who would have thought that they didn't have any intention of doing what they said they were going to do? Who would have thought that they... Oh, and I forgot Fusion GPS in the last segment. I meant to make that remark. Anyway, so they're now moving forward with Lindsey Graham has put out a plan, and it's his health care plan bill. And it's, you know, on the surface, he makes it about federalism. At the surface, he makes it about, you know, all right, let's send it back to the states. On the surface, as a conservative, I'm thinking, all right, this is a pretty good idea. Well, let me see the details of this. And already I see the new revised Senate bill collapse. Mike Lee, Jerry Moran of Kansas came out against that on Monday night. So you got this Graham Cassidy plan, and they might get a chance. But a lot of the devil is going to be in the details of this. Not sure if it's going to get legs or not, but the alternative, at least so far as can be gleaned, based on Lindsey Graham's press release, You know, it shows that the Republicans plan to change health insurance in general, what it would mean for consumers. The senator's plan would turn all of the estimated $110 billion federal dollars currently spent on Obamacare into block grants to the states. Well, does it repeal any of Obamacare, any of the taxes, any of the mandates? You know, I'd like some specifics to all of this. Graham is saying that each state would get a lump sum of federal money and they get to spend it as they wish. Any point, Vermont has expressed interest in a state government-run finance single-payer system like they have in Canada. Now, if they want to do that, I'm fine with whatever Vermont does. I'm never going to live in Vermont. I'm just not going to. So what do you want to tell? My son just walked into the studio. Do you want to tell me what you want to tell me? Go ahead. Tell everybody.
I don't know if I want to share this to the general public.
You don't want
public.
To share this to the general public? Which what happened today?
No, not really.
All right. It's not a big deal. I'm not worried. All right. There you go.
Yeah,
so just take a picture of it. Oh, great. Great. Seriously? This is my good news of the day? That's fine. So anyway, so I want to know the devil's in the details in all this. I don't care what Vermont does with their block grant. In California, probably wants a single payer. Let them have. I'm never going back to California. Lived in California 5 years, beautiful state, but I'm not paying 13.5% of my income in state taxes for it to be wasted in California. I'm now going to be careful, like so many other Americans are, and we're actually comparing and contrasting what states offer before we make decisions about whether we're going to move there. One of the great fascinating developments of states with their high taxes, burdensome regulation, their unfair treatment of individuals that enjoy any level of success is they punish success. They are, you know, it's amazing that, you know, people are supposed to want to get up, work really, 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 really hard, go to school, get their degree, then figure out ways that they can do things that they love and make products and services that people want, need, and desire and provide a good living for themselves in the process. And sometimes they fall a little short. They don't finish college. They pay the consequences. You know, life is about, you know, you do suffer consequences for some of the things you do, some of the choices you make. And if some people decide not to go to school, that's going to limit their opportunities down the road. If some people decide that they don't want to eat and live healthy and they want to just eat everything in sight, you're going to pay the consequences for getting overweight and risking your health in some capacity. Want to smoke 100 cigarettes a day? Same thing. If you're going to do drugs, you're ruining your life. This is absolutely A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And if you're lucky enough and you don't die, if you're using hard drugs and you get a chance to start over, well, you're one of the few, because a lot of people never get off them. So people are making decisions. Why do so many people now move to Florida? Why has there been a mass exodus from states like New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and others? Because of their, and California, because of their ridiculously high taxes, their burdensome regulation, and the confiscatory policies of those states. So if you pay a 40% rate, hopefully those numbers go down under Donald Trump. If you pay a 40% top rate income tax, federal income tax, and then you pay a 13.5% tax in California, okay, that's 53.5%. Then you still got to pay your FICA taxes, your Social Security taxes. Then you got to pay, let's see, your hidden taxes, your sales taxes, your gas taxes. If you die in a state like New York, you know, another 10%, you get taxed twice on all of your money because then they take 10% of your wealth when you die. That's the death tax after you pay 40% death tax to the government. So, you know, you get taxed again if you were smart enough to save money and not take vacations and not spend extravagantly. You can't even give the money to the charity or the people in your life that you love. That's so people are looking at, okay, South Carolina, North Carolina, they're looking at Florida, they're looking at Texas. You know, the problem I have with people moving to these states, if you want to move from California to Texas, I'm fine with it. You want to move from New York to the Carolinas, you want to move from New York down to Florida, if you want to move to Texas, I'm fine with it. But don't bring the liberal policies that destroyed your state with you and destroy these good states. That's the only thing I ask. You know, half the people that end up going to Florida from the Northeast end up voting liberal down in Florida and then now turned it into a purple state. Well, don't ruin Florida because you're fleeing New York and the liberal policies you left behind, or New Jersey. So the thing, I don't really care. On the face of it, it sounds like something that federalism I'd like to support, but I don't see any talk in this bill at all about eliminating anything that is Obamacare, any of the taxes, any of the mandates. Now, maybe it's, I guess I'll have to get Lindsey Graham on. He's not exactly my biggest fan. Or maybe we can get Senator Cassidy. Who's Cassidy? Let's get Cassidy on and see if they want to talk about it. Anyway, the federal government already contributes and distributes money, Medicaid money, to states based on need. Under the bill that the Senate is starting in 2020, states would choose between accepting a fixed amount of money per Medicaid enrollee per capita or one large but capped block grant, regardless of the number of participants. This is why I was upset with John Kasich. John Kasich bought into this. Why did John Kasich buy into it? Because he's saying, well, it's good for the people of my state. And, the problem is what I've been saying. The Republican Party is a party now that has no identity. In the course of all of this discussion and lead up, remember, Trump became president back in January. It's now August. And for the life of me, after seven long, long, arduous years and so many show votes, 60 plus show votes, going back to the districts, we support repeal and replace. We first saw this, the first signs of this in 2013 when Senator Ted Cruz said, we have some constitutional authority and it's called the power of the purse and let's use the power of the purse. And if we use the power of the purse, we can defund Obamacare. No, and he was excoriated by his own party, and they predicted 2014 is going to be a disaster. But Cruz was right. Cruz was the one standing on the Constitution and principle. And the rest of these guys were proven that they didn't mean what they said. We learned this in the House. And we learned very quickly after they didn't share the bill that Paul Ryan laid out. It was an establishment bill. It was written behind closed doors. Nobody saw it. It was no collaboration, so it was a dumb way to do it. Same thing happened in the Senate. I mean, when they dumped the skinny repeal bill out there with nobody had 24 hours to read the stupid thing. It's just the gang that can't shoot straight, but they're missing an identity. They're not the party that they said they were of repealing and replacing. They're not the party of limited government anymore. They're not the party that believes in principles of free markets and capitalism and competition. They're not the party that believes in securing our borders, certainly. We haven't seen a lot of funding of the border wall go on, although it did happen in the House, in fairness. They're certainly not the party of action. But for President Trump, there would be no success today, but for what he's now doing on his own in spite of all of them. And we're beginning to see that the economy's on the precipice. It's dying to turn around. I mean, if they have their way, they would love to fix this economy, love to turn this thing around, love to get the ship righted. We still have the lowest number of people on food stamps than we've had in, 7 years? We have all this other economic success that nobody talks about. Record after record of the stock market is happening, although I don't consider that the biggest barometer, but it is an indicator. For me, if we're not getting people back to work and out of poverty and off of food stamps, this is all meaningless. But we have the lowest unemployment right now, and we are getting nearly a million jobs created. And that's only because the president has moved forward with the regulations and doing the things that he can do on his own. But can he really govern by himself? He does need Republicans to go out there and do their part. And they're just as responsible on all of these things as anybody. All right, moving on to some other things here. We have, according to the Daily Caller, and we're going to talk to the reporter that's been breaking all these stories and doing a great job over there, emails that were stored on hard drives that were destroyed by Debbie Wasserman Schultz's computer tech guy, the IT guy, recovered by the FBI, apparently federal law enforcement authorities may have already recovered and read what was on those hard drives. It depends what happens, but even if it's hit with a hammer, it says, it probably doesn't damage the platters that actually hold the data, which remains recoverable. Well, that would be a good thing. Also, one other bit of information, Andy McCarthy has a really good piece out. I know I rarely go on NRO anymore. They all hate me over there, which is fine. A bunch of never-Trumpers. But anyway, he pointed out that the hard drive smashed, that apparently, you know, she was the DNC chair up until the Democratic National Convention, and also two dozen other House Democrats, their computers were serviced by this computer tech guy. And since Russiagate began with the publication of emails to and from Wasserman Schultz's DNC were leaked to WikiLeaks by an unknown source, you know, will the FBI be able to retrieve it? It looks like yes. The hard drives, even though they've been smashed, and, you know, the FBI can do that, and they can match them with the DNC emails that were published by WikiLeaks, then it raises the questions, why was she trying so hard, this is the Luke Rosiak story, to prevent us from seeing them? Could it be that she's exposed as colluding with, we now know there was collusion of some kind with the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign. Bernie Sanders, the fix was in. The whole election, the primary was rigged. If I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, I'd be pretty pissed off. The Justice Department's crackdown on Trump administration leakers has uncovered a, quote, astonishing number of suspects, according to the Washington Times. This is all deep state stuff. Aiming to deliver on the president's promise to stop the unauthorized release of sensitive information, apparently on Friday or later this week, the Department of Justice will deliver news on the progress. And apparently it's astonishing the number of leakers that have been, well, we know it's seven times that of previous administration, so that's going to be good. You have one top Republican, rightly so, that is calling Trent Franks for Mueller's resignation. Well, he's so conflicted, how could he possibly be a part of it? He's Comey's best friend. He's only hiring Democrats and Hillary Clinton's attorney and people that donate to Obama, Clinton, and the Democratic Party. So that would be a good start, in my opinion. Let's see. You see, I have a new poll out in spite of people thinking, oh, it's chaos with the Republicans. Democrats are still sinking with blue collar voters. Their no idea strategy is not a strategy. That's not going to work. Their slogans and bumper stickers aren't going to solve their problems. And we've got one other report today, and I'm not sure if this is true. I'll be looking for information that Kellyanne Conway may, in fact, be the next communications director. I have no idea at this point if that's true or not. So that's just the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. Just kidding. For those of you who don't know that reference, it's a long story. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. You know, I keep hearing from a lot of you, and I share your frustration. I don't know what else to say. Because we all worked hard. Every one of you worked hard. Okay, you wanted the House in 2010, and the Tea Party movement started. And we all went out, and we all voted for people that promised something that apparently they didn't mean, or they now have gotten cold feet on. And that's repealing, replacing Obamacare. Give us the Senate, we'll do it. Give us the House, the Senate, and the White House, and we'll do it. President will sign it, and now they're not doing it. Nor are they doing the tax cuts. Nor are they building the wall. Nor are they doing anything. And they can't even subpoena those people that are responsible for committing crimes and felonies. We can't give up. You got to keep fighting. Because I think this is America's last shot. We'll continue.
Is the president threatening to cut off funding for the health insurance plans for members of Congress? Is that what that means, bailouts for members of Congress?
Yeah, actually, I talked to the president at length about that exact issue yesterday, and I think his attitude is this, and his attitude is pretty simple. Keep in mind, he does have this way of channeling a large number of the American public, and what he's saying is, look, if Obamacare is hurting people, and it is, then why shouldn't it hurt insurance companies and, more importantly perhaps for this discussion, members of Congress? There is a certain benefit that members of Congress get as part of an OPM decision from a couple years ago. And I think the president's simply looking at this and going, is this fair? Is it fair that Obamacare is hurting people, that if you live in a county that's what we call now a bear county with no coverage, if you're obliged by law to buy something that's not for sale and that's hurting you, or if you've got a coverage but can't afford to go to the doctor and that's hurting you, shouldn't insurance companies and members of Congress bear some of that burden as well? So I'm familiar with that issue. We'll see what happens as we move forward.
It's interesting. There was a headline this morning in the Washington Post that I'm curious if you accept the premise of. And the headline was simple. It's not Obamacare anymore. It's our national health care system. Do you accept that the attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act as we know it are dead, and now your job and the job of Republicans is to make the system work better.
Well, no, I don't accept the premise because we don't have a healthcare system. We've got about five healthcare systems. You've got Medicare for seniors, Medicaid for those individuals who are low income or vulnerable or disabled. You got the employer-sponsored coverage where most individuals in this nation, about 175 million, get their coverage. Got the VA system. And then you have the individual and small group market where Obamacare focused its attention on setting up the exchanges. And it's that area where we've seen absolute failure. We've got 40% of the counties in this nation that only have one issue or one insurance company providing coverage, so that's no choice at all. Next year, you'll have dozens of counties that have nobody offering coverage, so this system is imploding. It is failing, and the president's passion, our concern is to make certain that we put in place a system that actually works for patients.
And I want to ask you about a specific that the president tweeted about. He said this yesterday, if a new health care bill is not approved quickly, bailouts for insurance companies and bailouts for members of Congress will end very soon. Now, he appears to be referring to these payments that your department has been making monthly. And I know there is some legal questions about whether this has been appropriated by the legislative branch or not. But the insurance companies have said this month-to-month reimbursement of propping up the insurance markets is creating more uncertainty, and they would like to see some yearly certainty there. Can you say for certain that all of these insurance payments are going to be made every single month while the Affordable Care Act is law?
Well, Chuck, as you know and your viewers know, this is a case that's in court, and the case is House v. Price. So I'm the defendant in that, and therefore I can't talk about it. What I can tell you, though, is that the court has made a decision that those payments were made illegally, and that's working its way through the court system, and it will. But again, what the president wants us to appreciate and wants everybody across this land to appreciate is that the system is being propped up in a way that makes it so it's not working for people. It's not working for those small businesses. It's not working for those families across this land. It's not working for patients. It's not working for physicians who are trying to care for those patients. So we're trying to put in place, trying to get a system that actually does work for patients and families and doctors so they're making decisions, not Washington, D.C.
I've been here just 6 months. I'm ready to act. I have pen in hand. Believe me, I'm sitting in that office. I have pen in hand. You never had that before. You know, for 7 years, you had an easy route. We'll repeal, we'll replace, and he's never going to sign it. But I'm signing it, so it's a little bit different. But I'm ready to act. For 7 years, you promised the American people that you would repeal Obamacare. People are hurting. Inaction is not an option. And frankly, I don't think we should leave town unless we have a health insurance plan, unless we can give our people great health care.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity's show. Glad you're with us. 800-941-SEAN is a toll-free telephone number. So Republicans in total, complete, utter disarray as it relates to health care. When are they ever going to get this bill done? Somebody that's had great ideas, he actually ended up getting the full repeal, the 2015 repeal vote, back on the table. And even then, we still have senators that wouldn't keep their promise. It's beyond frustrating. And I think the fact that 3-4 senators can keep the entire Republican Party held hostage is a party beyond recognition to me. And the way this has been handled is just, it's like amateur hour. It's disgraceful. Rand Paul has been one of those that has been rock solid. I want to give you credit as we start this. Number one, you are credited in pushing the 2015 repeal vote, the very same thing that a lot of these people voted for then when it would have when it didn't matter and now they wouldn't vote for it. I think you exposed a lot of people for being frauds and phonies, so I thank you for that. But number two, was a good idea. I remember the first time you suggested it on this program, I said, I can go for that, and then transition into health savings accounts and cooperatives and really good, bold ideas. That would have been fine with me. And the other thing is, as I know, you had to grit your teeth to make the votes you made here, but I think you did the right thing to advance the ball. Maybe it was like 30% of what you wanted, and I felt the same way as you did.
You know, what I never understood about this is we all promised to repeal Obamacare. I couldn't understand why people went back on their word, but I kept arguing, you know what? there is some version, if we just keep narrowing the repeal till we get everybody on board. But the skinny repeal, the one they were calling the skinny repeal, it was probably 25% repeal. And by the time we got to that, then people were saying, oh, it's not enough. So the bigger repeal, the 2015 repeal, was too big, and the skinny repeal was too little. And so there was nothing going to please these people. But you had to start somewhere, because there's not one Democrat in Congress who will vote to repeal any regulation on health care or vote to repeal any tax. So we had to do it with Republicans, and that would have forced it to where the Democrats would have to negotiate. But the Democrats are not going to negotiate, because they've just seen us to be spineless.
You know, I blame the Democrats, because they want nothing. That they need to own this thing lock, stock, and barrel. And, you know, it's frustrating to me. There is no desire for any consensus building on their part, just like when they rammed it down our throat the first time, and the way they used reconciliation to pass it, which they even thought, and Obama even said, that he didn't have the right to use that process to get it done. But anyway, that's a different story for a different day. But what do we do now? Do you like Lindsey Graham's idea about block granting this back to the states? I have serious questions about the amount of money they'll spend, number one, but a part of me says let the states decide if the money is right.
This thing sounds a little bit off kilter. He's going to keep all the Obamacare taxes, so that's at least half of Obamacare.
Strike two. Okay, go ahead.
That's a strike.
Strike one is they're going to overspend, so what's strike three?
Keeps all of the Obamacare regulations. I don't think it repeals any regulations. And then the big thing is that these hundreds of billions of dollars they're going to give to the insurance companies, I think they still do that. So I think it has most of the spending, keeps most of the regs, and keeps all the taxes. So I think they're trying to dress it up in states' rights and dress it up in federalism, but it still sounds like big government to me. I will tell you one hopeful thing, though. I just got back from the White House about 5 minutes ago. I spoke to the president yesterday. I spoke to his team today. I'm keeping alive and trying to get the administration to expand association health plans. This is where you can join a co-op across state lines, and we think we're close to it. I hope the president does something very soon to let everybody in the country who wants to join an association basically get their insurance as group insurance. You're protected from pre-existing conditions, and most importantly, you get a good price because you're buying it as part of a large group.
What form of legislation, Senator, would that take?
It would actually be through executive action. The Department of Labor defines which groups are allowed to be an association. And under President Obama, surprise, surprise, they didn't let anybody form an association. They just said, we don't want anybody to be able to join a group. If the Trump administration takes a different approach and says simply, you know what, we think the National Restaurant Association, the National Retailers Association.
How about the National Talk Radio Hosts Association?
Everything but that. We can't let any of those right-wing talk shows.
Yeah, of course. By the way, did you hear Senator McCain, your buddy's attack on us and talk radio? By the way, did you hear the clapping in the Senate chamber that I can go straight to hell? I'm sure it was me among many. I thought that was very mean of him to do that.
Well, don't get me started on that, because as I recall, he campaigned quite heavily about repealing Obamacare, and so big disappointment. But on the association plans, before you get to that,
I have one question. Is it true, somebody sent me some stuff online, and I can't confirm this. Do you know if Senator McCain was huddled with Democrats and bragging, go try and make America great now, Donald? Did that happen?
Yeah, no, I can't confirm or deny that. I don't know, and so I wasn't privy to that meeting.
What do you mean you can't confirm or deny?
I was just kind of joking. I wasn't part of the meeting, so I don't know. I have no idea. But on the association plans, what I would say is what's really neat about this is there are 2 million fast food restaurants in our country. There's like 14 million workers in fast food. These are people that are struggling. They're working class. They're trying to get ahead, and a lot of them don't have health insurance. There's 28 million people don't have health insurance. Insurance under Obamacare. With allowing the Restaurant Association to purchase insurance, 14 million people could have one person negotiating price for them. It would be the greatest thing you could ever see or ever imagine as far as changing the relationship between the consumer and big insurance. Big insurance hates this idea because they want you to be beholden to them and they have all the power. But what if 14 million people were able to negotiate together for their price and insurance? I think a lot of people who don't get insurance now would all of a sudden be able to get insurance.
All right, stay right there. Senator Rand Paul, Senator of Kentucky, 800-941-SHAWN is a toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll take a quick break. Congressman Mo Brooks at the bottom of the hour. He's somebody I'm supporting for the U.S. Senate. And as we continue, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is with us. Look, I try not to drag you too deep into all of this. It's not your fault that the Senate majority leader is from your state, and I know you guys get along personally, but in all honesty, how is it that he can't get this done? It's August. The president's been in office since January 20th.
You know, I guess if there's blame to go around, I would probably assign the blame to those who went back on their word. You know, they promised to vote for Obamacare repeal. They did vote for it a year ago. We gave them the same bill, and they changed their mind. And so, really, I think those are the people, if you want to cast blame and want to figure out what happened. Even in leadership, they can't make people vote. They try to get people to the table and get them to vote. But in the end, really, it goes back to those who promised to repeal Obamacare and then didn't have the courage to do it in the end.
What about, why is it taking so long to get all the appointments of the president and get his people on board so we can get rid of Obama holdovers in the deep state?
Democrats. Democrats won't allow any votes. In fact,
why don't we get rid of the supermajority and just go to 51 votes?
Well, actually, for most appointees, it is. It's simple majority for most nominations. What they do is they delay, they drag their feet, and it's just taken forever. And so that's what we're up here this week fighting to do. You know, I just met with the Secretary of the Department of Labor, and he said he's got nobody approved. He's got 22 people that he has given forward. All the paperwork's been done, and he can't get Senate to approve them. So, yeah, we need to speed this along, and really, probably, when you look at how many people have to be approved, maybe we shouldn't be approving more than just the top couple because it's taking so long to do it.
Two things the president brought up in his tweeting this weekend. One is that you guys should get rid of your own plans while the American people suffer under a different system. And the president also said no vacations till you get your job done. I agree with him on both.
Well, the only thing is I think it may not be exactly accurate. For example, we do get Obamacare, and that's one of these things that people have put out there. Every member of Congress, we're stuck with it. I hate it. It's terrible, but we do get Obamacare. What they're talking about is getting rid of the employer benefit. And the employer benefits what everybody in the federal government gets, and everybody gets works for Toyota, everybody works for your radio station, gets what's called an employee benefit. So they're talking about getting rid of that. If they did that, you have to realize, though, what they're asking to do is to treat members of Congress differently than everybody else in the country. Even Obamacare didn't take away anybody's employee benefit. So I think there's been a little bit of inaccurate reporting on that. The other thing I would say is some conservatives are convinced, oh, if we take it away, they'll change their mind. Look, these guys are richer than Midas up here, three-fourths of the Senate.
By the way, not Louie Gohmert. Louie Gohmert lives in his office along with a bunch of other congressmen.
Yeah, but is it right to punish somebody that lives in their office that is already voting against Obamacare?
No. Listen, I'm not trying to hurt Louie Gohmert. I'm just saying that, you know, for goodness sakes, how about this? How about you guys just stay work? You guys have more vacation, Senator, and you know this, and I'm not blaming you, but you guys have more vacation than anybody I know on the face of the earth.
Right. My only point is, you know, I think it was Mark Twain who said, you know, no one's safe from the legislature's in session. We don't do a lot of good things. It's mostly us trying to stop bad things from happening. And right now there is no agreement. I think the only way we're going to get agreement on repealing Obamacare is it's going to get worse. I think it's going to get worse over the next 6 months. There's going to be more areas of the country with one insurer, monopoly prices, and more areas with no insurer. And then either the Democrats are going to have to come to the table or the weak-kneed Republicans are going to have to stand up and say, okay, I've had enough. I'm actually going to keep my promise and vote for repeal.
But do they need to stay on this before they go to the tax cuts?
I'm not sure they change their mind in 2 weeks. We had them here all night, and they kind of are where they're going to be. I think the only thing that changes things now is if Obamacare gets worse. But in the meantime, I haven't given up on trying to fix this. Like I say, I was at the White House today. I think there's a good chance that President Trump can legalize millions of people to get group insurance.
All right, last question. Would that also include being able legally to buy catastrophic plans? And I got to go.
That you have to get rid of. Yes, in some ways, yes. Because when you join these groups,
you can do what you want.
Under the ERISA law, some people are free of Obamacare regulations. That is my goal, is to make them free of regulations.
I'll take that. That's a good start. As usual, you have a lot of good ideas. I like that idea. All right, Senator, thank you. 800-941-SHAWN, a toll-free telephone number. Mo Brooks in a battle for the Senate Republican slot down in Alabama is next.
Holding them accountable. Sean gets the answers no one else does. America deserves to know the truth about Congress.
Hi, I'm Mo Brooks, candidate for the Senate, and I approve this message.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best.
President Trump promised a wall to keep us safe and to protect American jobs for American workers. But even some establishment Republicans are blocking the way. Elect me to the Senate, and I'll fight every spending bill that doesn't fund that wall. And if I have to filibuster on the Senate floor, I'll even read the King James Bible until the wall is funded. And you know what? Washington could benefit from that. We're going to build that wall, or you'll know the name of every Republican who surrenders to the Democrats to break my filibuster. I give you my word, and I don't give my word lightly. And you know, there's an old saying that when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Mm-hmm. Now is not the time to leave the American people in a lurch. Now is not the time to leave American health care at risk. Now is not the time to continue to stress even worse the family budgets as parents are trying to take care of their kids. So I hope they won't quit. And if they're going to quit, well, then by golly, maybe they ought to start at the top with Mitch McConnell leaving his position and letting somebody new, somebody bold, somebody conservative take the reins so that they can come up with a plan that can get through the United States Senate and serve the needs of the American people.
You think that the problem is leadership? You think it's time for a change for the Republicans in the Senate?
Well, unquestionably, the leadership at the top is responsible. The buck stops there. That's why you take on that kind of responsibility. And if Mitch McConnell cannot get the job done on this, how is he going to get the job done on the rest of President Trump's agenda over the next 3.5 years? As I see it right now, this is a killer. As you recall from 6 months ago, if we did not get health care passed, that meant that there would be no tax reform, which in turn meant that there would be no infrastructure improvements. And if that ends up being the case, as was represented to us in the House back in the spring when we forced through a health care bill, well, we need new leadership in the Senate if they can't get the job done. It's not necessarily anything bad about Mitch McConnell himself personally,
right?
But he's got a job to do, and if he can't do it, then as The Apprentice would say, you're fired. Get somebody who can.
There you have Mo Brooks, congressman from northern Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama, and he's saying, hey, Mitch, you can't get the job done. It's time to go, which I agree with wholeheartedly. And he's in a bit of a big fight down in Alabama to get the nomination to replace Senator Jeff Sessions, who's now the attorney general. And Mo Brooks I've known for 27 years. I knew him in my local Radio Alabama days, and he had the great privilege and distinction of filling in for me at the time and did a lot of radio himself at the time. He was also the Madison County District Attorney, and he's been working hard for the people of Alabama for years. Mo Brooks, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Sean. How about yourself today?
I'm good. Now, you're getting attacked on a variety of fronts. And one is that you didn't support Donald Trump in the beginning. And I want to give you an opportunity to address that.
Well, I think that's a fair statement. I was statewide campaign chairman for Ted Cruz. And I was also one of his national spokesmen who were asked periodically to be on national TV. So up until the point in time in late May, perhaps June, that Ted Cruz was out of the race and Donald Trump was locking it up, I was using every argument I could possibly conceive of in order to help Ted Cruz win the nomination. But I will say this. There are three things. One, in October, after Access Hollywood, when a lot of Republicans were fleeing from Donald Trump, I wrote a $2,500 check to help Donald Trump win the state of Florida. That's definitely not something that a never-Trumper would have done. Two, in that context, Luther Strange, who is Mitch McConnell's boy in this race, he appears to be the never-Trumper. We've asked him to produce a check, asked him to produce some kind of endorsement of Donald Trump, and he never has. So while he's attacking me, it seems that he's the one that fits the bill for what he's attacking me for. But all that is kind of behind us. What we really need to focus on is the future. And in the United States Congress, if you go to 538.com, Sean, I'm sure you're familiar with that website, they say that I've voted with Donald Trump 95% of the time on issues important to the White House, where the White House has taken a stance. That's an A in anybody's book. But finally, the entire conservative agenda is dead. The entire Republican agenda is dead. the entire Republican agenda in support of President Donald Trump is dead if we keep this 60% rule in the United States Senate. We only have 52 Republican senators. If we have to have 60 votes to pass legislation, that means Chuck Schumer can block anything that we might want to try to push through the United States Senate. That kills all of our efforts to reverse the damage that the Democrats have done to our country decade or so.
I had some conversations with you when the House was doing repeal, and I think both of us were a little stunned at the number of Republicans who had campaigned for years and years on they want to repeal and replace. They had no intention of ever doing it. And look at the Senate now. They can't even do a simple repeal. And my argument, I think yours too, because I think we agree on this, is there's really no excuse now when you have the House, the Senate, and the White House not to get, it's not going to be the perfect bill. It's not going to be the Mo Brooks and Sean Hannity bill, but they ought to get something done.
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly, but there's a bigger picture on this 60% rule in the United States Senate. The president has figured out that the president's agenda is dead for 3.5 years if the standard for passage in the United States Senate is 60% when we only have 52% of the body that is Republican. And so he's asked us to go to majority rule in the Senate. I agree with majority rule in the Senate. And Luther Strange, my opponent, has signed a letter urging Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer, the Democrat, to retain the 60% rule, thereby empowering Chuck Schumer and the Democrats to block everything we want to do. And our country's future is at stake, Sean. We cannot afford to waste this opportunity. But unless we get more Republicans in the United States Senate that will act like they're the majority, then we're just spinning our wheels.
You know, I'm watching you, and I share your passion, and I agree, and I'd like to get to the number 60, but then are we going to be able to count on Murkowski, Collins, McCain, and a bunch of others that really have been so disappointing to us? With that said, what did you think of Lindsey Graham's proposal about, all right, let's block grant it all back to states, and if California wants a single-payer system, and let them have a single-payer system. If Alabama is smart enough, and I believe it is, to do something that maybe like the cooperatives that I talk about in Wichita, Kansas, where you can get concierge care for $50 an adult and $10 for a kid and get a catastrophic plan on top of it, then the people of Alabama will do much better than the people of California ultimately. Do you like that
idea
or no?
Great idea. I'm 100% for states' rights, and to the extent the federal government is going to be involved in this issue, let's limit that involvement to the amount of money we're going to dedicate to it, send it to the 50 states, let the 50 states be the incubators of ideas, the experimental place, those that get it right, that get it done best, and you just gave some examples, well, others can then copy it. But if you have the federal government dictating top down, then there's one chance, and if we get it wrong, people are going to lose their lives. I much prefer the 50-state approach, and I am very intrigued by what Lindsey Graham and others are now offering. Let's see if the Senate can get off the duck and get that job done.
Yeah. Last question. If the guy that you are running against that is temporarily took the slot of Jeff Sessions, you believe has ethical issues. Tell us about those.
Huge ethical issues. We're having to incur $15 million in the state of Alabama to pay for a special election solely because then Attorney General Luther Strange, when he sought the appointment from the governor of Alabama, who's since been disgraced and left office, was holding over the head of the governor a criminal investigation. And with the use of that criminal investigation, he, Luther Strange, was able to obtain personal gain, that being a U.S. Senate seat. Now, every prosecutor knows that your job is to represent the people, the state of Alabama in this instance, and you do not cut side deals with a criminal defendant or a target of a criminal investigation that benefits you personally. That violates every ethical rule book that there is.
So you think a quid pro quo
right now is the governor decided to speed it up because of the ethical cloud associated with that kind of unethical conduct.
That's a pretty big charge. And has anybody responded to that?
Well, there is no response. Everybody knows it. It's true.
Yeah.
The governor ended up pleading guilty.
Yeah.
And
Luther Strange was doing the investigation.
Attorney General. He had to resign thereafter.
And Luther Strange was doing the investigation.
The unethical conduct.
Well, I got to give you credit for one other thing. I've known you all these years, so I know you're a man of great integrity, and I know you believe everything you say, which I love, and you're also a member of the Freedom Caucus, and frankly, that's one of the few groups of people in Washington I feel I can now trust anymore, and that's sad, but I wish you a lot of luck here. I do think people need to look at the fact that you did support Donald Trump in the general election. There's nothing wrong with supporting Ted Cruz in the primary. I happen to be a fan of Ted Cruz, too. And I think he's been doing great work, especially on health care. His amendment that he's putting together on health care was amazing. And he's been very supportive, working hard for the president to keep promises, unlike a lot of these other people. So, Mo Brooks, I wish you luck in the primary, and I appreciate you being with us. We really appreciate your time. And when is this primary?
The primary is 2 weeks from today, August 15th. And if people want the help and we need it, go to MoBrooksForSenate.com, MoBrooksForSenate.com. By way of example, Mitch McConnell, who I want to toss out of the leadership position in the United States Senate, is holding a $10,000 a plate fundraiser with special interest groups so that Luther Strange can have more money to run false ads against me. That's what I'm up against in the state of Alabama, and I need conservatives across the United States to rally to our cause if we're going to get our ship straightened in the United States Senate and in the Washington, D.C.
All right, Mo Brooks, thank you so much. Wish you all the best. 2 weeks from today, 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We just need people like Mo Brooks in the Senate. And it's pathetic to say, but we got to replace. I mean, Jeff Sessions was a great senator. You know, we can't replace it with somebody that's going to end up working with Lisa Murkowski. Good grief. All right, let's get back to our busy phones, 800-941-SEAN. Let's go to Lisa Murkowski territory. We're in Anchorage, Alaska now with Tony. Tony, hi, how are you? What's the temperature this time of year in Anchorage?
It's late 50s, low 60s.
Oh, man.
But the sun's up all day, so I can't complain.
So you got 24 hours of light now?
Not in Anchorage. It's like that up north.
Yeah. How many hours do you get?
Probably 15. It all depends. Right around solstice, we get about 20.
All right, so on the worst day of the year, the darkest day of the year, how many hours of sunshine do you get?
Between 4 and 6, I think.
I mean, isn't that devastating? Doesn't that, like, darken your day?
You know, it makes up for it in the summertime when you get all the light. I'm from New York originally. I moved up here, but I like it up here.
You know what's funny? I mean, I'm not trying to take your time away, but I'm just fascinated by it. I watch all those Alaska shows, out in the wilderness kind of shows, and people living out and literally off the grid, et cetera. I mean, it's pretty amazing how people live. It's so different from my life experience that I'm fascinated by it.
Anchorage is like the city, so it's totally different than everything you see in the shows. But State Troopers is probably the most realistic show you get.
Yeah. All right, so what's on your mind today?
I'm just frustrated with Lisa Murkowski. I mean, I didn't vote for her because I knew she was like this. But, you know, I work 60 hours a week. I don't have health insurance right now. Health insurance for me is $500 a month with a $5,000 deductible. By the end of the year, where they start kicking in, I'm going to spend $10,000. It's absolutely ridiculous, and I'm fed up. I don't know why they can't make health insurance like car insurance, why I can't, you know, join a cooperative, why I can't get major medical. It's ridiculous, and I'm tired of it.
You know, look, I get it, and I think this goes for a lot of people in the Senate and the House. I think we're going to really have to start reevaluating. And we really have to start asking ourselves, is this the person that we wanted in office? And I think I'm going to spend more time focused on primaries than I ever have in the past. I've always tried to stay out of that stuff. And I'm just going to pay attention. And if you're one of the senators that did not go along with doing your job and getting this over the finish line, I can't support you anymore. I won't support you. I can't support you, especially if you're one that promised to repeal and replace and you didn't do it. Because you could have at least repealed the thing and started from there and begun the process of transitioning to the better plan. And that would have been fine with me. I was perfectly acceptable that you do a piecemeal. So I'm disappointed like you. And I think if there's no consequences for their actions, then I think that you're going to get the government you deserve. Anyway, Tony, stay warm, my friend. God bless you. Dave is in Syracuse in upstate New York. What's up, Dave? How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, you know, I've got a few thoughts about the Republicans. I think Donald Trump should hold a class and teach these people what it's like to win. They've been so accustomed to being losers so long, they don't know what it's like to have the ball in an open field and know how to win. And even the best of them, like Jeff Sessions, I think the reason that Trump is so upset with him is that Sessions should immediately call for a special prosecutor and look into James Comey and Robert Mueller and all of the Democratic lackeys that Mueller's hired and turn their lives upside down like Mueller's doing to Trump. That's where the vulnerability to President Trump is. It's not looking into Hillary Clinton. She was last year's Super Bowl. Trump already knows he won that. As a matter of fact, keeping the Clintons at the head of the Democratic Party is probably the best thing the Republicans can do. The stench of the Clintons and all mm-hmm. the people associated with them can only hurt the Democrats.
All right, I got to go. But listen, I've been calling on specific names. I'll even do it again tonight on TV. Just lay out the names of the people that need to be questioned under oath. Some need to be investigated. Some should be indicted. And some should be tried. 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. An investigative report about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and this bizarre handling of this IT guy. What were they trying to hide? Next.
Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour. This is the Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. All right, remember when Debbie Wasserman Schultz was threatening the U.S. Capitol Police for gathering evidence on her IT staffers, you know, whatever it was. I guess it was a computer that she had a laptop, and she really goes at the Capitol Police guy, and the Capitol Police guy, no, we're going to keep this. And then this has now gotten deeper and deeper. At no time did the FBI, the DHS, or any intelligence agency contact me about a breach by Russia. Jay Johnson testifying to Peter King that the DNC declined the Department of Homeland Security's offer to fight Russian hacking. And Johnson says the DNC, CrowdStrike security firm, remember they brought them in to help? They wouldn't let the FBI have access to their computers. Then you got this whole Debbie Wasserman Schultz story about her IT guy double billing, family members on board, some without experience, we're told. Then she keeps this guy knowing that they've been double billed. Everybody else gets rid of this guy. And then he's trying to sneak off to Pakistan, and he's got what? He's got an ankle bracelet on. After wiring nearly $300,000 to his future location, how did he get all that money? Then he was, of course, arrested. Now the question I guess everybody has is very simple. How is it possible that you have two government hard drives that are smashed in the garage of this guy when we know that this firm, this group of people, this guy in particular, were involved in double billing? And when you put all these stories together, what do we got? Let's remind you what Debbie Wasserman Schultz said. And also what Jay Johnson said.
Can you elaborate more on what the DHS's connection with the DNC was, or consultation with the DNC was after you became aware of the hacking and they became aware of the hacking, as to what was offered them, what they accepted? Was there any level of cooperation at all?
To my disappointment, not to my knowledge, sir. And this is a question I asked repeatedly. When I first learned of it, you know, what are we doing? Are we in there? Are we helping them discover the vulnerabilities? Because this was fresh off the OPM experience. And there was a point at which DHS cybersecurity experts did get into OPM and actually help them discover the bad actors and patch some of the exfiltrations, or at least minimize some of the damage. And so I was anxious to know whether or not our folks were in there. And the response I got was, FBI had spoken to them. They don't want our help. They have CrowdStrike, the cybersecurity firm. And that was the answer I got after I asked the question a number of times over the progression of time.
Respectfully, Secretary Johnson is utterly misinformed. That is simply not accurate. And much that has been written about the timeline of events by the New York Times, the Washington Post, that document through multiple sources, including me, that the FBI and other federal agencies did virtually nothing to make sure that when they were aware, at the point that they were aware that there was, or concerned that there was an intrusion on our network by the Russians, that they did virtually nothing to sound the alarm bells to make us aware of that. And they left, essentially, the Russians on our network for almost a year.
Under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case, and I think that, you know, working through my counsel and, you know, the necessary personnel, if that in fact is the case, and with the permission of through the investigation, and we'll return the equipment. But until that's accomplished, I can't return the equipment.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
All right, joining us now is the investigative reporter who blew this wide open. He works for the Daily Caller. Luke Rosiak is back with us. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Sean.
All right, this is getting bigger and bigger. Isn't it amazing? If you took out the name Debbie Wasserman Schultz and you put in Reince Priebus when he was the RNC head, or the current RNC head, and you put their name in there, and you say, okay, now you've got these two busted up hard drives, you got this guy overbilling, you got unqualified people working in the IT department that may have access to all the classified information that some of the Democratic Party congressmen have, and she does everything in her power to keep this guy on the payroll, and all this happens. How do you read this?
Well, there's been a criminal investigation into cyber breaches, that is information that likely went outside of the Capitol Police, the Capitol Network, as well as theft going on since 2016. And these guys, it seems like they learned about the investigation and they frantically began liquidating assets. So they've sold four houses from November of 2016 onwards. Since June 20th, they've sold or are selling three houses. The wife got on a plane to Pakistan with $12,000 in cash in March, which was just days after Capitol Police formally sort of announced and banned these guys from the network. And then the guy, Imran, most recently tried to leave just last week, and the FBI did stop him. So it's very clear that they were fleeing. That's a fair characterization of this. They knew that they were criminal suspects. Debbie Wasserman Schultz also knew they were criminal suspects. And it appears that she knew that the wife left because she took her off the payroll like right after she boarded that plane. And then we're told by this guy's lawyer that the house was informed that he was going to Pakistan as well. So it seems that Debbie Wasserman Schultz knew that this other guy was leaving too.
Well, I mean, the whole thing, let's go through the story completely here and what you know about this guy in particular and about the people that were being paid. So his name is Imran Awan. Is that his name? The congressional aide? Tried to send wired $300,000 to Pakistan, right? Now let's talk about what we know about him and the people. They got what, over $4 million in payments?
Right. And I've been investigating these guys for the last 6 months, since before this arrest and before there started being more attention to it. And I know a lot about these guys. And what stood out to me the most is what seems to be a ghost employee scheme. So right after Imran started working for W. Wasserman Schultz a decade ago, you've got four of his relatives and two of his friends join the payroll, and they're literally making about as much as members of Congress made, which is not at all normal for an IT guy. And what's more, some of these guys spend a significant amount of time in Pakistan every year. One of them was running a car dealership. One of them was a 20-year-old college student. One of them worked at McDonald's. So there's indications to believe that these guys were not actually working, and yet they're making these exorbitant salaries. So even before these extremely Wasserman Schultz's clear reluctance to fire this guy and her very strong desire to keep paying him no matter how weird it looked, you have a decade of payments that were suspicious from the beginning, and some members of Congress should have or would have known, it seems, that these guys were not actually working. And, you know, that does raise the question of why they would sign off on those pay sheets, and that's where it does become concerning that they did have access to all their emails and files.
Unbelievable. So you got a bunch of guys working for some of them. One was running a car dealership, another a McDonald's. Does somebody that's working at a McDonald's have the skills to be an IT person?
You wouldn't think so. And, you know, and as soon as this guy got busted by the FBI, he got this lawyer that was like a close aide to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. I don't know how a random IT guy gets that lawyer. But he's been saying all kinds of stuff like, oh, they just had to leave the country because they didn't have any money. They couldn't afford to live in the D.C. area anymore. But it's a public record that these guys, just the husband and wife alone, were making $165,000 each. That's $330,000 a year. They owned, like, five houses. So it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if that money does appear to have left this country because they don't seem to have extravagant lifestyles in this country. But it seems like it's either gone to Pakistan or to somewhere else.
pretty amazing amount of money. Pretty interesting story. Why would Debbie Wasserman Schultz be fighting with the Capitol Police so hard? And why would government hard drives be busted up in this guy's garage? What do you speculate?
Well, Wasserman Schultz has retained an outside attorney to argue speech and debate clause to prevent the Capitol Police from examining this laptop, which I'm told the Capitol Police took after Imram left it. So there's reason to believe it's Imram's laptop, not hers, but she doesn't want them to see it. And speech and debate clause would typically protect, like, her own political activity, legislative activity. It probably wouldn't really apply here. So she really doesn't seem to want anyone to see what's on that laptop, and she really seems to want to keep paying this guy. So, you know, there are concerns that you could be using her emails against her and threatening to blackmail her to release these emails if she doesn't, you know, protect them and keep them on the payroll. It's a very legitimate concern when you consider that these guys are separately facing a civil lawsuit in Fairfax County, Virginia, involving their own stepmother saying that they installed high-tech listening devices in her house and on her computer, and they were using it to monitor her, to tell her she's not allowed to leave the house or to speak to anyone. And the goal of all this intimidation was basically to get her to sign this power of attorney in Pakistan that would give them access to money over there. So there's reason to believe that they were putting money in their father's name. Their father died, so the mom would get access to the father's bank accounts. And it seems like they desperately wanted to make sure that they got to get access to those Pakistani bank accounts.
Unbelievable. All right, stay right there. We'll continue. We'll have more with Luke Rosiak of the Daily Caller. This Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Imagine if it's the RNC, and imagine it's the RNC chairman. And imagine that the RNC chairman is protecting somebody this closely as well. What is it that they're hiding? Because it's obvious they're hiding. And what is this, you know, proclivity of the Democrats that they love to smash devices into smithereens or bleach bit them or just delete them and get rid of them completely? As we continue, investigative reporter Luke Rosiak is with the Daily Caller, and he's updating us on the very latest. Imagine a Republican RNC chair is hiring a guy that they know that double billed, is hiring people that seem unqualified for IT positions, paying as much as the chiefs of staff of many members of Congress, which is a very high amount of money to be paying them. Then you find out one's running a car dealership, another works at McDonald's until he was fired, and at which point he sat home all day, and a third IT person was a 20-year-old college student, and multiple members of the group spent a months at a time in Pakistan. Do you worry about this more from an intelligence vantage point, or do you worry about other things that could possibly be revealed? For example, one of the things that I have a lot of questions about, remember the firing of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and others on the eve of the convention. And remember, we now also have learned that the fix was in against Bernie Sanders. Do you think it's possible that maybe evidence of the collusion between Hillary's campaign and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, is that part of the reason that she wanted this information destroyed?
Well, if you search Imran's name in WikiLeaks, he does come up, and there's people involved with the DNC who are, like, on a first-name basis with him, and when they need access to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's personal iPad, they call him. So he was involved in some capacity. I don't particularly think he would have had access, or at least I haven't seen any evidence indicating he would have had access to the DNC's servers, but there's just, without Wasserman Schultz.
Well, not the servers necessarily, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz's emails, which could in some way implicate her. I mean, because we all know that the primary was rigged, and we all know that Bernie Sanders and his supporters were cheated, and we know that the DNC was involved, don't we?
And there's no doubt that Imran had access to all of Debbie Wasserman Schultz's emails. So really anything that she did, Imran could have read about, and there's no doubt that he's a bad guy. I mean, he's been accused, and his family members have been accused of fraud numerous times. So for the attorney to go out there and say this is just about bank fraud, I mean, first of all, anyone who takes 30 seconds to look into this, it's transparently not true. The FBI was surveilling his house as part of a long-running criminal investigation into his activities on Capitol Hill. The only reason they charged him with bank fraud is because he tried to flee the country, and they needed a way to take his passport so this broader investigation could continue.
How long did Debbie Wasserman Schultz keep him on knowing that he had double billed?
Well, the Capitol Police investigation was revealed, and he was banned from the Capitol Network, which is very rare, on February 2nd. And his lawyer says that he told the House that he was going to go to Pakistan on, you know, 5 months later, almost 6 months later, on July 24th. And Wassmann Schultz said she only fired him because of the arrest. So that clearly implies that she intended to continue to pay him even while he was in Pakistan, while also being the suspect in a criminal investigation. She's also said that he was serving as a technology advisor after he was banned, because you have to ask, why would you pay an IT guy who's not allowed to touch computers? She said he was advising her on technology issues. So if it turns out that the members of Congress decided that he shouldn't touch the network and she had him still access it in some way, even if he gets on the phone and tells other people or stands over their shoulder or who knows what, because he was seen in the Capitol building after that time,
right.
I think that would really jeopardize and also be sort of a slap in the face to other members of Congress, and that's something that members are interested in. People like Florida lawmaker Ron DeSantis are saying, you know, she should probably testify about this kind of thing.
I totally agree. She needs to testify, and I got to give you credit. You've done a lot of legwork on this, and you've really worked very hard. I know the media is ignoring it, which is so typical, isn't it? But we'll continue to stay on the story, and I hope, in fact, that she does get subpoenaed, is put under oath, because there's very, very strange happenings here, and the proclivity of the left to smash devices and hard drives and Blackberries and iPhones and bleach bit and acid wash hard drives is so out of control. And if Republicans ever did it, God help them, they'd be handcuffed, perp walked, mugshotted, and put in jail, and the key thrown away for life. Anyway, thank you, Luke. When we come back, wide open telephones as we continue the Sean Hannity Show.
Next, the Hannity Fake News Roundup.
With a full-scale investigation by the House, the Senate, and a special counsel over collusion with Russia during the 2016 election, President Trump has engaged in a series of Russian-style purges. First, there was Paul Manafort, the campaign manager, axed. Then came Chris Christie, the transition chief, axed. Then came Sally Yates, the acting attorney general, who refused to enforce the president's travel ban, axed. Then came James Comey, the FBI director, axed. Then came Sean Spicer, the first White House spokesman, axed. Then came Reince Priebus, the presidential chief of staff, axed. Then came Anthony Scaramucci, axed. With the regularity of the nightly news, President Trump is throwing bodies out of the White House at a rate that matches the Russian Revolution. Who he doesn't ax, he threatens. He threatens Republican senators who voted against him, like Dean Heller of Nevada. He criticized John McCain of Arizona, who he said was not a hero despite spending 7 years as a tortured prisoner after being shot down over Hanoi. McCain gave him a screw you for that one by voting against the Obamacare repeal. Susan Collins of Maine, her, of course. I wonder, by the way, if he's ready to give Russia, or actually Alaska, back to Russia because of Murkowski. Nobody likes to be scared by anybody. When you get scared from somebody, you turn against them because it bugs you to be scared. It's true of men and women as well. I think Trump is scared. I got with Peggy Noonan this week, and he's weak. He's scared. I think all this going around and purging people, just like Kim Jong-un. What does he do? He knocks off all his relatives when he gets scared. When you get scared of your position, you start killing people around you. We don't do that in this country. We fire them. Trump seems to know how to fire. That's my argument. It's not that he doesn't like chaos. He doesn't like being threatened existentially by an investigation which he can't seem to stop. And that hasn't stopped because of this weekend's craziness. It goes on and on. While we're sitting here, some of the best lawyers in the country are looking for dirt on Donald Trump in every direction. He knows it. He is scared.
Today, could anyone have predicted so much staff turnover from a man whose catchphrase is, "You're fired"? Just over an hour ago, another name added to the growing list of major exits under President Trump. Now it's White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci, gone after just a week and change on the job. His official start date was supposed to be mid-August, for what that's worth. In the last hour, during a Medal of Honor ceremony at the White House, President Trump made no mention of the Scaramucci departure, but we do expect to hear something more in the White House daily briefing, which is set to begin any minute now. We'll bring that to you live. We mentioned that long list of exits in just over 6 months. Over other high-profile departures include Reince Priebus out last week as chief of staff, Sean Spicer out the week before as press secretary, Mike Dubke, he was the previous communications director, James Comey as FBI director, of course, Michael Flynn was national security advisor. That doesn't even include lower-level departures, the White House now resembling the Red Wedding from Game of Thrones.
A real sense of cultural alienation that older, white, non-college-educated Americans have, the sense that their country is changing because of immigrants, because maybe blacks are getting rising up to a kind of central place in society because of, you know, gays being accorded equal rights, because of, frankly, a lot of working women.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
This is the CBS Evening News with Scott Pelley.
From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight with David Muir.
This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
All right, we get the idea. The breathlessness. It's so amazing the times we're living in here. Really amazing is that the media stokes a phony story. They ignore real stories with real truth, with real evidence. And you know the double standard is in play, and they just don't care. And if it ultimately comes out that, in fact, they're wrong, they'll just move on to another one. It's not truth in media anymore. It's propaganda. It's ideology. It's misinformation. And it's just outright lying. I can't imagine. We did the Debbie Wasserman Schultz story in the last half hour. I can't imagine that Donald Trump's RNC smashing up a bunch of hard drives that are government owned wouldn't be a bigger deal in the news media than it is, but for the few of us that are covering it. And that goes, it's the same with every other news story. Do you not think that the media would be freaking out if there were subpoenaed emails of Donald Trump and he goes ahead and Donald Trump's campaign deleted 33,000 of them? Whoops, they're about a wedding and a funeral and yoga and conversations with my wife who doesn't even email, or taking a hammer and breaking up BlackBerries into smithereens and breaking up iPhones into smithereens and delay and obfuscate and then send the FBI phones and BlackBerries without SIM cards. And then just for good measure, let's acid wash and bleach bit the computer system where you deleted the 33,000 emails. Let's do that too. Let's ignore the fact that five foreign intelligence agencies hacked into and got top secret classified and special access program information. Let's forget all of that. Let's forget the real Russia conspiracy story with the Ukraine. I'm sorry, with Uranium One. Let's forget the $145+ million kicked back to the Clinton Foundation. Where the money ultimately came from, nobody knows. She signs a waiver. It allows up to 20% of America's uranium, the foundational materials for nuclear weapons. But Vladimir's such a threat. She does it. There's a big reward on the other side from people that benefited from that deal. I don't know how else do you explain it. Forget, you know, imagine Donald Trump had an RNC rep go to the Ukrainian embassy, meet the Ukrainian ambassador. The Ukrainian ambassador is involved in trying to stop Hillary from winning. And then that information is back-channeled to the RNC and to Donald Trump's campaign. You don't hear about that either. It's, you know, James Comey leaking New York Times to get a special counsel. No problem. You got the general counsel now of the FBI. He's now being investigated for deep state leaks. Seven times the numbers of leaks from the intelligence community than the previous two administrations. A 350% increase in unmasking of people's names in the last election cycle. Susan Rice unmasking. By the time it's all said and done, I bet a lot of other big names are going to be revealed as having been involved in this process. But then media is not interested. The media is interested in three things. Palace intrigue. They're certainly not interested in policy. Palace intrigue, creating an atmosphere that the presidency is being taken down and that the will of the people are being overturned, and they're giddy about it. And they certainly don't care about the American people being served well in any or in all of this. Sad. The whole thing is pathetically corrupt and sad, but it is what it is. Let's go to Craig is in California on the Sean Hannity Show. How are you, Craig? What's going on?
Hey, you know, all these issues obviously are real important and they need to be dealt with. But I think it should be obvious to all of us that the most important item on the president's agenda list is draining the swamp. And by swamp, I'm referring to the Republican establishment. Because if the Trump phenomenon did anything, along with exposing the leftist Democrats and leftist media for who they are, it also exposed the Republican establishment for who and what they are. And unfortunately, it turns out there is corrupt, greedy, self-serving, big government-minded, power brokering, palm-greasing, two-faced elitists as the Democrat establishment. They hate President Trump. They hate Trump supporters. They don't believe what we believe, and they don't want what we want. And we have to replace them, Sean. As important as it is to repeal and replace Obamacare, it's more important to repeal and replace these career politicians, because if we don't, then whatever the president accomplishes during his presidency, within a year or two of him leaving office, these corrupt politicians, including the Republicans, will overturn or reverse everything that he does.
You got to understand the simple truth here. And we were all hoodwinked in many ways. I believe them in 2010, the House Republicans that ran on repealing, replacing. I actually believe they wanted to do it. I actually thought they were sincere. And then eventually over time, I began to see a chink in the armor, if you will, and a weakening of resolve, because in 2013, when we saw Ted Cruz do a filibuster, it became very apparent that the Republicans, who were being denied every opportunity, the right to repeal and replace, they had constitutional authority and power. And that was the power of the purse. And Ted Cruz ended up being excoriated for doing what he did, saying, let's use it. That's all his filibuster was about. Let's use the power of the purse. Let's stop it. And so they've had the power all along, and they've just were afraid of their own shadow and afraid of political consequences. All right, but the political consequences, now they've got the power, and now they're just afraid to lose the power. I mean, so...
Yeah, but, you know, one of the things is you keep saying this. You're making excuses for them.
I'm not making excuses for this. No, well, I'm not making any benefit of the doubt. I'm saying what they did then is wrong, and what they're doing now is wrong. How am I making an excuse? There's no excuse for this.
It's time we accept the fact that we've lost the party. These guys are all crooked. They're all corrupt. You may find one or two that you'd say actually believe in America.
Hey, Craig, with all due respect, do you listen to my show? Because I've been saying now for weeks this is a party without principles and without identity. What do you think I mean when
identity.
I say that?
That's the problem. They have an identity. They're all socialists. They're in the same...
All right,
they've all sold out to the same.
The Republican Party was supposed to be, and I'm not a Republican. I'm a registered conservative. They were supposed to be the party of limited government, less bureaucratic regulation, the party of free markets, the party of competition, the party of capitalism, the party of repeal, replace, the party to build the wall to protect our borders, the party of energy independence, the party of strong national security, identifying evil in our time, the party of tax cuts to stimulate the economy and economic growth. Well, I don't see any of these things being accomplished by any of them. So I've been saying they have no identity. What they were supposed to be, what they sold us that they were, they're not. Because if they were, they would have done it.
Yeah, but they've all sold out to a system that's corrupt, that puts career before country and money before...
Okay, there's nothing you're saying that I'm not saying, okay. So how am I giving them any... I'm giving them no leeway here, none.
Well,
and I am calling them out on a daily and nightly basis.
They really are. Can I give you a simple two-step plan here?
No, because I got to take other calls to be fair to other callers. I get your point. There's nothing you're saying that I don't agree with. The plan is get rid of them. There's no other plan. Let's go to Susanna is in Pittsburgh.
Hello, Sean. We love you in Pittsburgh.
I love Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm fine. Frustrated like you. Listen, Sean, I feel lied to by the Democrats, manipulated by the Republicans, and frustrated inside with all the rest of Americans. I read an article the other day that says, the people want everyone, the Congress, to move on from health care. That's a lie. We want them to stay on it and fix it. That's why we're paying them. And so here's what I'm thinking. Why won't they? Why won't they fix it? And I really do believe, number one, they don't have to live under it. Number two, they do not want Trump to win. They don't want to give him any victories so that he is flatlined by 2020. And I hate to tell them that what they have done with their manipulation is to totally strengthen our perseverance to make sure he gets back in again and that they get out. And I hope they hear this message. And I want to tell you that Mitch McConnell sickened me after the vote when he made this pathetic, wimpy, I want to say faint-hearted, I'm disappointed, so we're going to give this to the Democrats and see what they can do. Is he sleeping? Is he in a coma? We know what they want to do. They have given us what they want to do, and that's single-payer, socialized health care. We voted for Trump. We voted for his policies. We told them to work on his policies, not McCain's, because he failed as a presidential candidate. So I'm saying to the boys in D.C., you start being like men. Otherwise,
Listen, there's no other way to interpret John McCain's actions here. Let's be blunt and let's be honest, and it is what it is. He had made the promise repeatedly to repeal and replace, and John McCain enjoyed sticking it to the president. That's just that. Listen, I've known John McCain for years. I admire his service. I pray for his health. But I'll be honest, he's one at times very bitter, angry man. And I've seen it myself. We've not gotten along a lot in recent years. Trust me.
Right. Chris Matthews said that's why John McCain did it. He said he stuck it to the president.
He absolutely stuck it to the president. There are reports that he's gloating over it. I haven't been able to confirm them, but I've read them. Anyway, thank you. Will it not your heart be troubled, Susanna? We're going to do our best here because, I don't particularly love Lindsey Graham either, to be honest. And then Lindsey Graham has his proposal, let the states decide. Look, if you're in California and you want a single payer and California is going to pay the freight and you want to pay the taxes, I guess that's okay. What worries me about Lindsey Graham's plan is are we going to get rid of all the Obamacare taxes, all the bad stuff with Obamacare, and then we're going to send it back to the states? Because I think southern states would probably do a great job with it. I think there are some Republican governors that could do a great job, and they'd put together the cooperatives and health savings accounts that I've been talking about for years. You know, it's sad that the Republicans have to punt, but frankly, taking power out of Washington in any way, shape, matter, or form is appealing to me. But my fear is, of course, they're going to bloat it up with so much money that'll bankrupt us anyway. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We got a very busy Hannity tonight. Whoa, wait till you see the video. The left unhinged, the left losing their minds, the deep state, the destroyed Trump media, the obstructionist Democrats, weak Republicans, never Trumpers. Wait till you see what we've got. Laura Ingraham joins us tonight. Also, we'll talk about a media double standard, which should be looked at. Mueller's conflicts of interest, and oh yes, Debbie Wasserman Schultz that everybody's ignoring, but they wouldn't if it was Trump. 10 Eastern tonight, Hannity on Fox. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you back here tomorrow.